We're joined today by Karen Orenstein, who is the Director of Climate and Energy Justice Program at Friends of the Earth, one of many groups that are paying attention the next 2 weeks over the COP Climate Summit, COP26, taking place in Glasgow. And I called up Karen because Friends of the Earth had put out a news release earlier this week, which, you know, is sort of making a point that the United States really is not any longer a world leader on climate, and maybe Biden should be spending more time listening to what countries are saying, particularly in the Global South, rather than preaching. But, you know, Karen, you know, welcome to WOC. And, you know, what is Friends of the Earth's perspective of what's going on with COP, or should go on with COP?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You know, one thing I would say is that I don't think that the U.S. has ever been a leader when it comes to climate change. So traditionally in these international climate negotiations, right, it's COP26. So that means it's the 26th year of the COP. The U.S. has largely lowered global ambition because there's always been a concern of what can you get through the U.S. Congress. And of course, we know right now, not very much can go through the U.S. Congress. It's worse than it has been, but it's very often not been that easy of a place to get progressive environmental policy, let alone other types of policy. So traditionally, the U.S. has gone there, watered things down, and then not even agreed to what they watered down to. This happened with what's called the Kyoto Protocol, which was a way of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, where the U.S. made it less ambitious, less strict, and then wouldn't ratify it. This happened with the Paris Agreement, actually, with Donald Trump refusing, you know, taking the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement. But I know the U.S. gives itself a lot of credit for the Paris Agreement, but I mean, it's what we have to work with, but it is not an ambitious, justice-based, fair, science-based climate agreement, but it's what we have. So the U.S. actually has to take a look at itself and not point fingers at other countries, but think about what the role of the U.S. is as the largest historical greenhouse gas emitter and also as the world's largest economy. And that should dictate what we bring to the table, the science behind it, the fairness, the justice, and the morality.
Now, at the last Paris, you know, climate agreement, the United States was one of the countries particularly fought against reducing the target cap on global warming to 2 degrees. Sort of say, yeah, okay, we'll do 2 degrees, but we'll have a goal of 1.5 degrees. What is, you know, where are we at this point in actually confirming that 1.5 degrees really needs to be the target? And are they really beginning to do, you know, mandatory emission cuts that come anywhere close to fulfilling that goal?
Yeah, I mean, at present, there's a big discrepancy between what countries are doing, what countries say they're going to do, and keeping global temperature rise to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, right? Because we're already at 1 degree Celsius global temperature rise, and we see all awful impacts that are really killing people and ruining lives and livelihoods around the world, in the U.S. and elsewhere. So we're far from being where we need to be. The international climate space is all based on, it's pretty much consensus, and there has to be agreement. And so what the U.S. did with the Paris Agreement is they ensured that there is no compliance mechanism. It's all voluntary. So a country only commits to do what it wants to do. It can't be forced to do anything. So instead of saying, like, we want to keep global temperature rise to no more than 1.5, and that's our goal, let's work backwards. You know, the U.S., you need to reduce your emissions by X amount. Mongolia, you need to reduce your emissions by X amount. UK, you need to do the same. And that'll keep us at 1.5. No, what we have here is a system where each country says what it's going to do based on whatever political or legislative determination comes from that country. And it adds up to a lot more than 1.5 degrees. And that is a huge problem, because it is not, we're not looking at the science-based target and working back to how do we stay there. No, we're doing the opposite. We're looking at what we got, and it doesn't match the science-based target, if that makes sense.
You know, some of the news that have come out in the first few days is 20 nations, not particularly the relevant ones, have agreed to stop the overseas financing of fossil fuel plants. But the news seemed a little bit less positive on, you know, some type of commitment to phase out coal, and in particular, the United States, India, and China have not signed on to that agreement. How is, you know, really ending countries' commitment to, you know, stopping fossil fuels? How has that seem to be going so far in Glasgow?
It's an interesting factoid that the Paris Agreement and its founding, its predecessor or its companion document, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, they don't mention fossil fuels. Because the fossil fuel industry is lining the pockets of many governments, including the U.S. There is still far too many government subsidies for fossil fuels, both within the United States and within other countries. There is some progress. There was an announcement yesterday that the U.S. is going to be stopping, and a bunch of other countries stopping overseas financing of fossil fuels, of coal, oil, and gas. Now let's see, you know, the devil's in the details. Let's see what actually, what rules are actually laid out from, but that could be a real mark of progress. But yeah, the US would not commit to the domestic side of things. They would not commit to like a phase out of coal domestically. The other thing is that President Biden has said also domestically that he's going to be stopping he has put a pause on oil and gas, new oil and gas developments on public lands and waters, federal lands and waters. But then a bunch of states sued to stop the pause. And so now on November 17th, after the COP, there's going to be a huge lease sale to extract fossil fuels from waters off of the Gulf Coast, in particularly in areas that are primarily environmental justice communities, they're by those coasts. The Gulf is seen as a sacrifice zone. So there's still a long, long way to go between where we are and where we need to be. And the UN space is the only space we have right now where every country has a seat at the table. But it is very much a space that is heavily influenced by the financial sector, the fossil fuel sector, agribusiness. You know, one thing you might have noticed is there was a methane pledge to reduce methane emissions, which, you know, methane is a huge problem, but it's not covering emissions from the agriculture sector, which is the biggest source of methane in the United States. So there's just a huge gap between where we are and where we need to be in order to avoid catastrophic climate
change. One of the other key issues in Glasgow is a concept of equity, that the, you know, the rich nations that have caused climate change should be both actually coming off the $100 billion they have pledged in Paris, make it a bigger pledge, but also the concept of climate reparations. You guys, the polluters, really owe us to solve this problem. How is the equity issue phasing, other than lip service, at the COP26?
I mean, I think for the people on the streets, for civil society coming from the global south and the global north and from developing countries, like the idea of reparations is critically important. Now, the rich countries are not. I will say one small beacon of hope is that Scotland is the first rich country to like formally pledge money to pay for loss and damage in developing countries. And that means it is in some ways reparations. That's paying for things like the damage caused by hurricanes or wildfires, because up until this point, the US is one of the countries that has blocked a discussion on loss and damage at the climate talks. But the Friends of the Earth has long been in favor of the idea of climate reparations, because poor countries cannot develop the way that the United States did. We did it on cheap, dirty energy that externalized the cost to the environment, to public health, et cetera. And we're asking other countries to develop sustainably. But in order for them to be able to do that, they have to have the resources.
We're out of time. We've been talking to Karen Orenstein, Director of Climate Energy Justice Program. I assume Friends of Earth has a website?
Yeah, it's www.foe.org.
Thank you very much. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.